pretty smooth. So tell your friends, tell your family, share the love.
If you love radio, go digital. For more information on switching to digital radio and on coverage in your area, search online for BBC Digital Radio.
This is the multi-platform BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM. We're on digital radio and we're live online. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news read by Lopa Qatari.
The American Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has said the US military is ready to take action against the Syrian regime if it's found to have used chemical weapons against civilians. His comments came after a 40-minute telephone call between David Cameron and President Obama, in which the two leaders agreed to ask officials to examine all military options. The Syrian information minister said that American-led military intervention would set the region on fire. An Iranian general has warned the United States not to cross what he called a red line on Syria. The former Egyptian president Hosni Mubarak has appeared at the resumption of his retrial just days after he was released from prison and placed under house arrest. Mr. Mubarak, with his two sons and other senior officials, is charged with complicity in the killing of protesters during the uprising in 2011 that toppled him from power. Helicopter operators in the UK have suspended commercial flights using all types of the Super Puma aircraft following Friday's crash in the North Sea. A helicopter carrying oil workers came down off Shetland, killing four people. Rescue teams are making another attempt to retrieve the wreckage. Police in India have arrested the last of five men suspected of gang raping a 22-year-old journalist in Mumbai last week. The hospital treating the woman says her condition is improving. The former head of Scotland Yard, Lord Blair, has called for the government to consider new laws to protect official secrets. He was responding to the seizure of documents from the partner of a Guardian journalist at Heathrow Airport last week. Lord Blair said that there may need to be powers to tackle those who possess secrets without authority, because it would be extremely dangerous if they fell into the hands of terrorists. The chief rabbi, Lord Sacks, has said society is losing the plot as it becomes more secular. Lord Sacks, who steps down next month, highlighted the decline of marriage, an absence of trust, and a growth in individualism. Children were the victims, he said, with many living in poverty. And the weather, a much drier day for most of the UK with sunny spells. A few showers are expected across parts of England and Wales. And that's the latest BBC News and weather. The time is just about 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by Lopa Qatari. It's time now on Radio 3 for the early music show. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
At the Hermitage in St Petersburg hangs one of Caravaggio's most famous paintings, The Lute Player. A strangely androgynous young man looks out at us as he plucks the strings of this most iconic of Renaissance instruments. A music book lies open on the table in front of him, and close inspection reveals that not only has Caravaggio carefully painted a real piece of music, but we can even identify its composer, Jacques Arkadelt. OK, it's not a name we hear much these days, but it's high time Arkadelt was given an airing on the early music show, because he's actually one of the most fascinating figures of the period. Most famously, leaving the world hundreds of madrigals which came to represent the form's ideal, influencing his successors over the next century. But what we actually know about Arkadelt some 450 years after his death is another matter. Quite a bit of mystery still surrounds Arkadelt's early years, at least. So today we're going to trace his life as far as we can. And where there are gaps, well, we can let his glorious music speak for itself. the Riga Chamber Choir, Ave Sol, conducted by Imants Kukars, in a setting of the Ave Maria by Jacques Arcadelt. Today, probably his greatest hit. And it's Arcadelt we're focusing on for the next hour, one of the most important composers of the Renaissance, and yet a shadowy figure. He was probably born in 1507, and probably in Namur. It's now a large city in Belgium, but back then, on the cusp of the 16th century, it was a popular piece of European real estate that had been snapped up by Duke Philip the Good of Burgundy in the wake of the Hundred Years' War. Philip would soon marry his third wife, Isabella of Portugal, in nearby Bruges, and over the next four decades, his court would become the most celebrated in Europe, as would his Chapel Royal, thanks to the efforts of composers such as Binchois and Dufay. So, before Arcadelt's birth, a fine musical tradition was already established in the area, and with it, a culture in which an aspiring musician could study and flourish and, as we'll hear, could carve out a reputation as a racy young composer of the very latest form of song, the madrigal. The white and gentle swan dies singing, while I, weeping, end my life. How strangely different our fates. He dies unconsolable, and I die blessed. Even as I die, I'm filled with joy and desire. If this is the only pain I feel in dying, I would die 1,000 deaths a day. The final lines of Jacques Arcadelt's madrigal, Il Bianco e Dolce Cigno, performed there by the Hilliard Ensemble, an agonised, sensual lament for lost love that still speaks passionately to us 500 years later. It was around 1500 that the madrigal, as a form, really began its development in earnest. As a young music student, Arcadelt would have been very aware of this new style and was evidently quite taken with it, since he was to make madrigals the major feature of his work. He composed some 250 of them, five books worth. And yet, although he was born and bred in Flanders, all of them were published in Italy, and were therefore settings of Italian texts. Here are the Hilliards again. C'è la dura durezza.
Se dura la regia, se dura la regia.
C'est la dura durezza, an Italian madrigal by a composer from Wallonia, or today's Belgium, Jacques Arkadelt, from his first book of madrigals published in Venice in 1539. I guess it's not really surprising that Arkadelt's madrigals are in Italian, because by the late 1520s he'd moved to Italy. In spite of the hardships of such a journey from northern Europe, not to mention the dangers involved, this was a route undertaken by a good many musicians. Italy was the cradle of the Renaissance, the place where the ambitious and the talented could hone their skills in the company of some of the greatest masters and become familiar with the very latest developments in musical style. In fact, so many of them came that the Italians dubbed them the Ultramontani, those from over the mountains. And one of the most revolutionary things they learnt there was the importance of text. In earlier times, this had tended to take second place to the music, the words often hidden within some swirling contrapuntal texture. But now, as intellectuals and scholars began to investigate the ancient world, artists felt a growing confidence to celebrate the human condition. Composers now looked to express real feelings and to convey the true meanings of words through music that followed the natural rhythms of speech, as we see here. I vaghi fiori e l'amorose fronde, the lovely flowers and amorous branches, the grass and air give delight to others, but woe is me whose life is not restored by them. I vaghi fiori e l'amorose fronde, I vaghi fiori e l'amorose fronde. Orlando consort with Arkadelt's madrigal I Vaghi Fiori, a lovely example of the easy grace and facility with which Arkadelt set poetry to music. As we've heard, in Italy, Arkadelt was part of something of a musical invasion from the Flemish lands. Verdelo, Willard, Dorori and Lassus all went there, along with many others. But just how was it that so many of them also managed to bag the best jobs at the Italian courts and chapels, and with such apparent ease? Well, it had a lot to do with a man called Pietro Bembo. He was a Venetian-born scholar, poet, literary theorist and a cardinal. But above all, through his interest in the writings of Petrarch, he was a crucially important figure in the development of Italian as a formal language, as a vehicle for poetry. And it wasn't long before that interest in the sensual qualities of poetic language pirouetted into a desire to set that language to music, and a new musical form, the madrigal, was born. There were native composers on hand to cater to this new public taste, of course, but it seems that, at this early stage anyway, they just weren't fully able to rise to the challenge of setting these passionate, melancholy poems to music. So it was largely down to the lads from the north to corner the market, and they pulled off this particular Italian job with admirable skill. Mm-hmm. the singers of The Fires of Love with The White and Gentle Swan, Il Bianco e Dolce Cigno. Yeah, we did hear it earlier, ravishingly sang by the Hilliard Ensemble. But here we get a more homely style, a modest sort of personal rendition accompanied by a lute that might just be closer to the sound of the many amateur singers across Italy who increasingly got so much pleasure from singing the new madrigals. It was they, of course, who spent their hard-earned lira on Arkadelt's best-selling songbooks. No wonder they went into so many editions. And with such beautiful poetry, no wonder, perhaps, that even today we still think of Italian as the language of love. But apart from the social and marketing opportunities, we mustn't forget just how liberating this music must have been, as the new humanist philosophy of the Renaissance swept across Europe. Secular music that dealt unashamedly with real dramas and passions captured the public imagination, much as Michelangelo's revolutionary paintings, his vision of man's relationship with God, must have stunned visitors to the Sistine Chapel. And it was here, into this prestigious church institution, that Arkadelt, a non-Italian, came in 1539 when he was appointed Master of the Choristers. We don't know what led up to him being offered the post, but it may have been connected to this next piece, a sacred motet he probably composed while he was in Florence, just before he moved to Rome. Of course, the sexy sentiments of the madrigals wouldn't do here. Instead, we have text whose sentiment would surely have appealed to Arkadelt's prospective employers. Estote fortes in bello. Be steadfast in battle and do combat with the ancient serpent, and you shall enter the everlasting kingdom.
Thank you.
the Josquin Capella, directed by Meinolf Bröser, with the sacred motet Estolte Fortes in Bello by Jacques Arkadelt from the first half of the 16th century. You're listening to the Early Music Show here on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping, and it's Arkadelt's music and life we're exploring today. As a member of the Papal Choir, Arkadelt had every opportunity to have his church music performed, and yet today it's largely his madrigals that have brought him to our attention, settings of verses by some of the greatest wordsmiths of the time. They were sung informally between friends at grand parties and even used for teaching purposes. But instrumentalists made use of them too, people such as Francesco da Milano, considered the greatest lutenist of the time, who was in Rome around the same time as Arkadelt. Words like divine were used to describe his playing, and he was considered so important that he travelled with the papal entourage to meet with the King of France and the Habsburg Emperor Charles V. De Milano's own compositions started to appear in print a few years before Arkadelt's, and amongst them are his intabulations of part songs, what we might now call instrumental arrangements, such as this lute version of Arkadelt's madrigal, Quand'io penso al martir. A setting for solo lute by the 16th century lutenist Francesco da Milano of Arkadelt's madrigal Quand'io penso al martir. It was played there by Hopkins and Smith. Da Milano was by no means Arkadelt's only musical admirer, of course. 1553 saw the publication in Rome of one of the century's most important books on instrumental performance, Tratado de Glossas, by the Spanish composer and gamba player Diego Ortiz. This was the very first book to really lay out in detail instructions for musicians on how to ornament music. We might call it kind of improvisation today, but it wasn't as free as that. There were rules governing where and how you could embellish a phrase or melody, and how far you could stray from the original. As you can imagine, for any of today's performers wanting to recreate early music performance, books like this are really invaluable. Here's Jordi Savall and his group in four ricercars by Ortiz, based on Arkadelt's madrigal of Felice Occhi Miei. He leads on the bass viol, demonstrating the variety of ornamentation that Ortiz laid out in his book.
Thank you.
Jordi Savall on the bass viol, leading his colleagues in four Richicas by the 16th century Spanish scholar-composer Diego Ortiz, based on Arkadelt's madrigal O Felici Occhi Miei. Well, we've heard something of Arkadelt's activities in Rome, but before that, when he first arrived in Italy, he headed for Florence, where he was hired by Duke Alessandro de' Medici. But his employer was murdered by a member of his own family. And perhaps it was this that set Arkadelt on the move again, for within a year we find him in Rome, employed first at St Peter's and then at the Sistine Chapel. It was here that he began writing madrigals in earnest. But of course, being firmly placed in the ecclesiastical world gave him the opportunity to compose larger scale sacred music too. He's left us with a six-voice Magnificat, and 1557 saw the publication of settings of the Lamentations of Jeremiah and also of a Mass, the Missa Ave Regina Caelorum. This is the Josquin Capella, directed by Meinolf Bröser, with the Gloria and the Credo.
Gloria in excelsis.
Oh,
Thank you.
Gloria and Credo from the Missa Ave Regina Caelorum by Jacques Arkadelt, performed there by the Josquin Capella, directed by Meinolf Brusser. It is rather amazing, isn't it, to hear Roman music of the generation before Palestrina. In fact, it's quite likely that Arkadelt's music would have been one of the sounds that Palestrina grew up with. Well, we're heading towards the end of today's programme, but we do have time for one of his most ravishing motets, O Pulcherrima Mulierum. Again, it's based on a biblical theme, but this time the text is from the Song of Songs, whose passionate, sensual verses provide the perfect opportunity for Arkadelt to blend his mastery of the pleasure-seeking secular madrigal style with the demands of sacred music. Oh, most beautiful woman, you have wounded my heart. Come down into my garden. Come, my beloved.
The sacred motet O Pulcherrima Mulierum by Jacques Arkadelt, performed by the Josquin Capella, directed by Meinolf Brusser. Today's early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Lyndon Jones. And you can download a podcast of that show from the Radio 3 website. Just follow the links to the early music show from the Radio 3 homepage.
On Radio 3 from the BBC Proms, Wagner's Parsifal. Lars Klavermann, John Tomlinson and Katharina Dalyman star in Wagner's final epic drama of renunciation and redemption. Mark Elder conducts the Halle in Parsifal. This afternoon on BBC Radio 3 at 4:30.
It's 1 minute past two, and now the Sunday concert, and another chance to hear the prom concert given last Monday evening by the Scottish Chamber Orchestra. This is an edited repeat, as we're broadcasting Wagner's Parsifal later today, live from the Royal Albert Hall. We have a shorter than usual programme this afternoon, and so we're unable to bring you the opening work from last Monday's prom, Berlioz's overture King Lear. But you can hear that on the Listen Again facility on the Radio 3 website until tomorrow evening. Last Monday's concert was introduced by Martin Handley.
Hello and welcome to the Albert Hall, which for this evening's first prom welcomes the Scottish Chamber Orchestra with its young principal conductor Robin Ticciati in a programme of early romantic music. There's a baroque curtain raiser to the second half, though, a canon and fugue from Bach's The Art of Fugue. And the man who really reinstated Bach's music into the repertoire in the 19th century, Mendelssohn, it's his innovative Fantasia of a First Piano Concerto, for which Stephen Huff joins the orchestra. He gives the SCO a ringing endorsement.
So many of the players in this orchestra have their own chamber music lives, and you hear that in the way they play. They're all listening, they all know what it is to accommodate and to lead and to suggest ideas and to bounce ideas off each other, and that's thrilling.
The 22-year-old Mendelssohn conceived the concerto during the Italian trip that inspired his Italian symphony, and then wrote it down in just 3 days on his return to Germany. In it, you can hear just how natural a pianist he must have been. A fellow composer declared Mendelssohn played the piano as a lark soars. I put it to Stephen Huff this morning. It's as though this molten music just seems to pour out of Mendelssohn.
I think there's no question. He wrote absolutely marvellously for the piano. Everything lies under the hand, and yet he's also exploits certainly the instrument of his time to the fullest. He was also a great improviser, apparently. You know, he could improvise whole fugues, and so, like with Liszt, you know, I'm sure a lot of his music came from his improvising.
Mendelssohn doesn't have the reputation for being the most innovative of composers, but to me it seems that perhaps that's because the innovations feel so natural.
Yeah, it's very hard, isn't it? We look at this from a 21st century eye where fashion has to change every season. I don't think music worked like that, certainly in the 19th century until the 20th century. So Brahms is not original. Beethoven, of course, sounds just like Haydn at the beginning. So where do you draw that line? I think what matters is that the inspiration of Mendelssohn is absolutely there, and the music has such engagement somehow. It's so direct and so fiery.
Stephen Huff. To the mouth of the lion, but a friendly lion, as he puts it. Stephen Huff coming onto the platform, together with Robin Ticciati, joining the Scottish Chamber Orchestra to perform Mendelssohn's First Piano Concerto.